My Father is a Polar Bear by Michael Morpurgo. This story is a tissue of truth, mostly. As with many of my stories, I have woven truths together and made them a truth stranger than fiction. My father was a polar bear, honestly. Tracking down a polar bear shouldn't be that difficult. You just follow the paw prints. Easy enough for any competent Inuit. My father is a polar bear. Now, if you had a father who was a polar bear, you'd be curious, wouldn't you? You'd go looking for him. That's what I did. I went looking for him, and I'm telling you, he wasn't all that easy to find. In a way, I was lucky, because I always had two fathers. I had a father who was there. I called him Douglas. And one who wasn't there, the one I'd never met, the polar bear one. Yet in a way, he was there. All the time I was growing up, he was there inside my head. But he wasn't only in my head, he was at the bottom of our starite shoebox, our secret treasure box with the rubber bands around it, which I kept hidden at the bottom of the cupboard in our bedroom. So how, you might ask, does a polar bear fit in a shoebox? I'll tell you. My big brother Terry first showed me the magazine Under the Bedclothes by torchlight in 1948 when I was 5 years old. The magazine was called Theatre World. I couldn't read it at the time, but he could. He was 2 years older than me and already mad about acting and the theatre and all that. He still is. He had saved up all his pocket money to buy it. I thought he was crazy. A shilling. You can get about 100 lemon sherbets for that down at the shop, I told him. Terry just ignored me and turned to page 27. He read it out. The Snow Queen. A drama something or other. Or Hans Andersen's famous story by the Young Vic Company. And there was a large black and white photograph right across the page. A photograph of two fierce looking polar bears baring their teeth and about to eat two children, a boy and a girl who looked very frightened. Look at the polar bears, said Terry. You see the one on the left, the fatty one? That's our dad, our real dad. It says his name and everything. Peter Van Diemen. But you'll not tell you. Not Douglas, not even Mum, promise. My dad's a polar bear, I said. As you can imagine, I was a little confused. Promise you won't tell. He won't. On. He went on. Or I'll give you a Chinese burn. Of course I wasn't going to tell, Chinese burn or no Chinese burn. I was hardly going to go to school the next day and tell everyone that I had a polar bear for a father, was I? And I certainly couldn't tell my mother because I knew she never liked it if I ever asked about my real father. She always insisted that Douglas was the only father I had. I knew he wasn't, not really. So did she. So did Terry. So did Douglas. But for some reason, that was always a complete mystery to me. Everyone in the house pretended that he was. Some background might be useful here. I later found out when my father was a soldier in Baghdad during the Second World War. You didn't know that there were polar bears in Baghdad, did you? Sometime after that, my father met and fell in love with a dashing young officer in the Royal Marines called Douglas McLeish. All this time, evacuated to the Lake District away from the bombs, blissful, unaware of the war and Douglas, I was learning to talk, to walk and talk and do my business in the right place at the right time. So my father came home from the water to discover that his place in my mother's heart had been taken. He did all he could to win her back. He took her away on a week's cycling holiday in Suffolk to see if he could rekindle the light of their love. But it was hopeless. By the end of the week, they had come to an amicable agreement. My father would simply disappear because he didn't want to get in the way. They would get divorced quickly and quietly, so that Terry and I could be brought up as a new family with Douglas as our father. Douglas would adopt us and give us McLeish as our surname. All my father insisted upon was that Terry and I should keep Van Damen as our middle name. That's what happened. They divorced, my father disappeared. At the age of 3, I became Andrew Van Damen McLeish. It was a mouthful then, and it's a mouthful now. So Terry and I had no actual memories of our father whatsoever. I do have a vague recollection of standing on a railway bridge somewhere near Earl's Court in London, where we lived, with Douglas's sister, Aunt Betty, as I came to know her, telling us that we had a brand new father who would be looking after us from now on. I was really not that concerned, not at the time. I was much more interested in the train that was shuffling along under the bridge, wreathing us in a fog of smoke. My first father, my real father, my missing father, became a taboo person, a big hush-hush taboo person that no one ever mentioned, except for Terry and me. For us, he soon became a sort of a secret phantom father. We used to whisper about him under the blankets at night. Terry would sometimes go snooping in my mother's desk and he'd find things about him. "He's an actor," Terry told me one night. "Our dad's an actor, just like Mum is, just like I'm going to be." It was a couple of weeks later that he bought the theatre magazine home. After that, we'd take it out again and look at our polar bear father. It took me some time. I remember before the truth of it dawned on me. I don't think Terry can explain it very well. I'd have understood it much sooner. I'm sure I would. The truth of course, as I think you might have guessed by now, was that my father was born an actor and a polar bear at once and the same time. Douglas went on to work a lot. When he was home, he was a bit silent. So we didn't really get to know him, but we did get to know Aunt Betty. Aunt Betty simply adored us. She loved us. She loved giving us treats. She wanted to take us on a special Christmas treat, she said. "Would we like to go to the zoo? Would we like to go to the pantomime? There was Dick Whittington or Puss in Boots. We could choose whatever we like." Quick as a flash, Terry said, "The Snow Queen. We want to go to the Snow Queen." So there we were a few days later, Christmas Eve 1948, sitting at the stalls at a Mantine performance of the Snow Queen at the Young Victoria Theatre, waiting for the moment when the polar bears came on. We didn't have to wait for long. Terry nudged me and pointed, but I knew already which polar bear my father had to be. He was the best one, the snarliest one, the growliest one, the scariest one. Whenever he came on, he really looked as if he was going to eat something or someone. He looked mean and hungry and savage, just the way a polar bear would look. I have no idea whatsoever what happened to the Snow Queen. I just could not take my eyes off the polar bear father's curly claw, his slavering tongue, his killer eyes. My father was without doubt the finest polar bear actor the world had ever seen. When the great red curtain closed at the end and opened again for the actors to take their bows, I clapped so hard that my hands hurt. Three more curtain calls and the curtain stayed closed. The safety curtain came down and my father was cut off from me, gone forever. I'd never see him again. Terry had other ideas. Everyone was getting up, but Terry stayed sitting. He was staring at the safety curtain as if in some kind of trance. I want to meet the polar bears, he said quietly. Aunt Betty laughed. There's no bears, dear. They're actors, just actors, people acting. And you can't meet them. It's not allowed. I want to meet the polar ears, Terry repeated. Sorry, I want to meet the polar bears, Terry repeated. So I did, of course, so I joined in. Please, Aunt Betty, I pleaded, please, don't be silly, you two. You do not get silly notions sometimes. You do get silly notions sometimes. Have a chocolate ice instead. Get your coats on so we each got a chocolate ice, but that wasn't the end of it. We were in the foyer, caught in the crush of the crowd when Aunt Betty suddenly noticed that Terry was missing. She went loopy. Aunt Betty always wore a fox stroll, head still attached round her shoulders. Those poor old foxes looked every bit as pop-eyed and frantic as she did. As she plunged through the crowd, dragging me along behind her and calling for Terry. Gradually the theatre emptied, still no Terry. There was quite a to-do. I can tell you, policemen were called in off the street. All the programme sellers joined the search. Everyone did. Of course, I'd worked it out. I knew exactly where Terry had gone and what he was up to. By now, Aunt Betty was sitting down in the foyer, sobbing her heart out. Then, cool as a cucumber, Terry appeared from nowhere, just wandering in the foyer. Aunt Betty crushed him to her in a great hug. Then she went loopy all over, telling him what a naughty, naughty boy he was, going off like, "Where were you? Where have you been?" she cried. "Yes, young man," said one of the policemen. "That's something we'd all like to know as well." I remember to this day exactly what Terry said, the very words, Jimmy Riddle. I just went for a Jimmy Riddle. For just a moment, he even had me believing, what an actor, brilliant. We were on the bus home, right at the front of the top deck, where you can guide the bus round corners all by yourself. All you had to do is steer hard on the white bar in front of you. Aunt Betty was sitting a couple of rows behind us. Terry made quite sure she wasn't looking. Then very surreptitiously, he took something out from under his coat and showed me the program. Signed right across it were the words, which Terry read out to me. To Terry and Andrew, with love from your polar bear father, Peter, keep happy. Night after night, I asked Terry about him. And night after night, under the blankets, he'd tell me the story again about how he'd gone into the dressing room and found out Father sitting in his polar bear costume with his head off, if you know what I mean, all hot and sweaty. Terry said he had a very round, very smiley, and that he laughed just like a polar bear would laugh, a sort of deep bellow of a laugh. When he'd got over the surprise, that is, Terry described him as looking like a giant pixie in a bearskin. Forever afterwards, I always held it against Terry that he never took me with him that day down to the dressing room to meet my polar bear father. I was so envious. Terry had a memory of him now, a real memory, and I didn't. All I had were a few words and a signature on a theatre programme from someone I'd never ever met. Someone who, to me, was a part polar bear, part actor, part pixie, not at least easy to picture in my head as I grew up. Picture another Christmas Eve 14 years later. Upstairs, still at the bottom of my cupboard, my polar bear father in the magazine in the star right shoebox, and with him all our accumulated childhood treasures, the signed programme, a battered champion conquer, a 65er, six silver ball bearings, four greenish silver, three penny bits, Christmas pudding treasure trove, a red devil throwed pastille tin with three of my milky teeth cushions in yellowy cotton wool, and my collection of 27 Cowry shells gleaned over many summers from the beach on Samsung in the Scilly Isles. Downstairs, the whole family were gathered in the sitting room. My mother, Douglas, Terry, and my two sisters, half-sisters really. But of course, no one ever called them that. Aunt Betty, now married, with twin daughters, my cousins, who were truly awful, I promise you. We were decorating the tree, or rather the twins were fighting over every single dingly-dangly glitter ball, every strand of tinsel. I was trying to fix up the Christmas tree lights, which, of course, wouldn't work again, whilst Aunt Betty was doing her best to avert a war by bribing the dreadful cousins away from the tree with a Mars bar each. It took a while, but in the end she got both of them up on to her lap, and soon they were stuffing themselves contentedly with Mars bars, blessed peace. This was the very first Christmas we had the television. Given half a chance, we'd have had it on all the time. But wisely enough, I suppose, Douglas had rationed us to just one programme a day over Christmas. He didn't want the Christmas celebrations interfered with by that thing in the corner, as he called it. By common consent, we had chosen the Christmas Eve film on the BBC at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock was a very long time coming that day. And when at last Douglas got up and turned on the television, it seemed to take forever to warm up. Then there it was on the screen, The Great Expectations by Charles Dickens. The half-mended lights were at once discarded, the decorating abandoned, as we all settled down to watch in rapt anticipation. Maybe you know the moment. Young Pipe is making his way through the graveyard at dusk, mist swirling around, an owl screening, gravestones rearing out of the gloom, branches like ghoulish fingers whipping at him as he passes, reaching out to snatch him. He moves through the graveyard timorously, tenderly, like a frightened fawn. Every snap of a twig, every barking fox, every arcing heroine sends shivers into our very souls. Suddenly, a face, a hidden face, a monstrous face, looms up from behind a gravestone. Magwitch, the escaped convict, ancient, craggy and crooked, with long white hair and a straggly beard. A wild man with wild ears, the ears of a wolf. The cousins screamed in unison, long and loud, which broke the tension for all of us and made us laugh. All except my mother. Oh my God, she breathed, grasping my arms. That's your father. It's him. It's Peter. All the years of pretense, the whole long conspiracy of silence were undone in that moment. The drama on the television paled into sudden significance. The hush in the room was palpable. Douglas coughed. I think I'll fetch some more logs, he said. And my two half-sisters went out with him. In solidarity, I think. So did Aunt Betty and the twins, and that left my mother, Terry, and me alone. I could not take my eyes off the screen. After a while, I said to Terry, he doesn't look much like a pixie to me. Doesn't look much like a polar bear either, Terry replied. At Magwitch, every appearance, I tried to see through his makeup. I just hoped it was makeup to discover how my father really looked. It was impossible. The polar bear father, my pixie father, had become my convict father. Until the credits came up at the end, my mother never said a word. Then all she said was, well, the potatoes won't peel themselves, and I've got the Brussels sprouts to do as well. Christmas was a very subdued affair that year. I can tell you that. They say you can't put a genie back in the bottle. Not true. No one in the family ever spoke of the incident afterwards, except Terry and me, of course. Everyone behaved as if it had never happened. Enough was enough. Terry and I decided it was time to broach the whole forbidden subject with our mother in private. We waited until the furor of Christmas was over and caught her alone in the kitchen one evening. We asked her point blank to tell us about him, our first father, our missing father. I don't want to talk about it, she said. She wouldn't even look at us. All I know is that he lives somewhere in Canada now. It was another life. I was another person. It's not important. We tried to press her, but that was all she was willing to tell us. Soon after this, I became very busy with my own life, and for many years I thought very little about my convict father, my polar bear father. By the time I was 30, I was married with two sons and was a teacher trying to become a writer, something I had never dreamt I could be. Terry had become an actor, something he had always been quite sure he would be. He rang me very late one night in a high state of excitement. You'll never guess, he said. He's here. Peter, our dad, he's here in England. He's playing in Henry IV, Part 2 in Chichester. I've just read a rare review. He's Falstaff. Why don't we go down there and give him the surprise of his life? So we did. The next weekend, we went down to Chichester together. I took my family with me. I wanted them to be there for this. He was a wonderful Falstaff, big and boomy, rumptious and raunchy, yet full of pathos. My two boys, 10 and 8, kept whispering at every time he came on, is that him? Is that him? Afterwards, we went round to see him in his dressing room. Terry said, I could go in first on my own. I had my turn a long time ago, if you remember, he said. best if he sees just one of us to start with, I reckon. My heart was in my mouth. I had to take a very deep breath before I knocked on that door. Enter, he sounded, still jubilant, still Falstaffing. I went in. He was sitting at his dressing table in his vest and braces, boots and breeches, and humming to himself as he rubbed off his makeup. We looked at each other in the mirror. He stopped humming and swiveled around to face me. For some moment, I just stood there looking at him. Then I said, "Were you a polar bear once, a long time ago in London?" "Yes." "And we were once the convict in Great Expectation on the television?" "Yes." "Then I think I'm your son," I told him. There was a lot of hugging in the dressing room that night. Not even to make up for all those missing years, maybe, but it was a start. My mother's dead now, bless her heart, but I still have two fathers. I get on well enough with Douglas. I always have done in a detached sort of way. He's done his best for me. He's done his best by me. I know that, but in all the years I've known him, he's never once mentioned my other father. It doesn't matter now. It's history best left crusted over, I think. We see my polar bear father. I still think of him as that. Every year or so, whenever he's over from Canada, he's well past 80 now, still acting for six months of every year. A real trooper. My children and my grandchildren always call him Grandpa Bear because of his great busty beard, the same one he grew for Falstaff. And because they all know the story of their grandfather, I suppose. Recently, I wrote a story about a polar bear. I can't imagine why. He's upstairs now reading it to my smallest grandchild, to my smallest granddaughter. I can bear him in a slaying and a growling just as a proper bear bears do. Takes him back. I should think so. Takes me back. That's for sure.